Now we will have a short talk on the subject. Swami Vivekananda on Christ. You know, there are two ways of looking at a great spiritual teacher. One way is to look upon him and try to understand him in the light of the tradition, the hierarchy, maybe the particular church or organization that comes into existence as a result of his teachings. The Catholic Church, the different denominations of Christian churches, for example, have kept alive the teachings of Jesus for the last 2,000 years and have inspired and taught and guided millions of people, either billions of people, for the last 2,000 years. So that's one way of looking upon a great spiritual teacher. Then there is another way of looking at a great spiritual teacher. That is a more unconventional way of understanding and following him. Well, I can give some examples. If you read the life and teachings of some of the great reformers of India, some of whom had some connection with Sri Ramakrishna and Vivekananda, you find they evolved a very unique approach to understanding Jesus and Christianity. They may not be using terms like Dominus Jesus, salvation through Christ alone. They may not be using those terms. See, a man like Gandhi was highly inspired by the teachings of Jesus. Raja Ram Mohan Roy, who is perhaps the pioneer of modern reform movements in India, who founded the first reform movement in India in 1828, that was 8 years before the birth of Sri Ramakrishna. He was the founder of Brahma Samaj. He has written extensively on Jesus Christ. And another leader of the same movement, his name was Keshavachandra Sen, who was a disciple of Sri Ramakrishna. He also was a great admirer of Jesus Christ. Some of the admirers, some of the devotees, and some of the great chroniclers of Sri Ramakrishna, like Mahendranath Gupta, were well versed in the teachings of Jesus Christ. They had a way of looking at Jesus beyond the church, beyond the man-made institutions. They looked upon Jesus as a great universal spiritual teacher who had helped, who had enriched the spiritual legacy of mankind. So it's very interesting to study this first encounter of great Indian spiritual leaders, the most prominent among whom were Sri Ramakrishna and Vivekananda, with Jesus Christ and Christianity. On the other hand, it would be also interesting to study in contrast the first encounter of modern European explorers and travelers with Hinduism. I shall begin that something just by of contrast. If you read Rajaram Mohan Roy, you find many wonderful things he says about Jesus Christ. So also Keshav Chandra Sen, P.C. Majumdar, P.K. Banerjee, Brahma Bandhu Upadhyaya, many. Swami Turiyananda, who is the founder of the Shanti Ashrama, said Jesus Christ was a yogi. In contrast, the first explorer who landed in India, who encountered Hinduism, was Vasco da Gama. And he came in the year 1498. He landed in a small town and he was received with great pomp and hospitality. And on the way, there was a Divine Mother temple. That temple is still there, for your information. Those of you who want to visit the place, if you go to Calicut, 20 miles, 14 miles away from there, there's a temple is still there. When Vasco da Gama, accompanied by his Portuguese travel sailors, entered the temple, he thought it was the Virgin Mary's temple because he had heard of the mother temple, in Spain. In fact, it is said that Columbus and many of the explorers who came to America prayed in that temple of Virgin Mary in Spain, of course, in Extremadura. I had the privilege to visit that church about 3 weeks back. Before Columbus started sailing towards America, he had blessings. So Vasco da Gama thought this is a temple of Virgin Mary, and he entered. Later he found it something different, a Hindu goddess. Of course, Vasco da Gama's history is different. He ended up persecuting the people living on the coastal areas, Hindus, and also, and he was supposed to be the one who destroyed the ancient Jewish synagogue of Cochin, which was founded in 52 AD. Anyway, that's a different story. Now, what I mean to say, there are many common factors in these traditions. Vivekananda himself once said when he went to Italy, when he visited some Catholic cathedrals, when he watched liturgy, the rituals going on, he said it's very similar to what the kind of rituals that take place in Hindu temples in India. Anyway, it's very interesting to think of the great role of Swami Vivekananda in evolving a very unique approach to Christianity and Jesus that doesn't conflict with the established hierarchical approach to Christ and Christianity, rather takes you beyond that. Well, I can begin by, Vivekananda says, I'm quoting from Vivekananda. Swamiji says, "The omnipresent God of the universe cannot be seen until he is reflected by these giant lamps of the earth, prophets, man-made gods, incarnations, and embodiments of God." Vivekananda writes this in Christ the Messenger. According to Vivekananda, Christ was an incarnation of God. That's the simplest way of putting the whole subject in a single sentence. Christ, according to Vivekananda, was an incarnation of God. The only difference is Hinduism accepts all great epoch makers in the history of spiritual evolution of mankind as incarnations, but a great universal thinker like Vivekananda could not agree with the idea of the exclusivism and the finality of Jesus. So that's the main difference between the way to understand a great spiritual teacher who actually belongs to the whole humanity. He belongs not only to those who accept him, he belongs to those who reject him also. God doesn't come exclusively for the sake of those who worship him. God comes also for those who may not be able to understand him. That's the difference between God and man. See, at the human level, you respect a man only if he respects you. But God can accept you even if you don't accept him. Again, I can quote Vivekananda. You live your life in such a way that God will accept you even if you do not accept God. So in this respect, you find a man like Gandhi was holding a copy of Bhagavad Gita and also Bible in his hand. So also Vivekananda was holding a tiny copy of the Imitation of Christ, the Great Mystic River, in his hands. He traveled all over the world holding in his hand this non-baptized heathen holding the sacred book of Christianity, the Imitation of Christ. And Vivekananda's respect and reverence for Christ was no less than that of St. Augustine or St. Aquinas. Now, that's why Vivekananda says, you know, the omnipresent God of the universe cannot be seen until he is reflected by these giant lamps of the earth. So he said Christ, Buddha, all the great spiritual teachers of the world, they are giant, huge lamps that keep shining throughout. And they don't discriminate. You know, the sun doesn't discriminate when it makes its light available to humanity. So the light of the lamp, spiritual lamp like Jesus, are available for all. That's why his approach was a universal approach. That's a Vedantic approach. So Swamiji says, if I, as an Oriental, have to worship Jesus of Nazareth, there is only one way left for me, that is to worship him as God, as nothing else. That is from Inspire Talks. That's what Vivekananda says. If there is any way for me to understand and approach Jesus, there is only one way, that is to approach him and understand him as an incarnation. So, one unique aspect of Vivekananda's approach to Jesus and Christianity was he looked upon him with the same reverence and respect with which he looked upon his own teacher, Sri Ramakrishna, or any of the incarnations of Hinduism. So Swamiji used to quote one very interesting section of the Beatitudes. He says, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. And Swami Abhedananda and Swami Turiyananda looked upon Jesus Christ as a yogi. Now, these are some very interesting examples that I want to begin with when we talk about Jesus Christ. Now, as I mentioned earlier, there are two aspects of every religion, every spiritual teacher, according to Vivekananda. One is the lofty mysticism, the humanism, the universalism, the compassion, all that you find as the central teachings of all great teachers, including Jesus Christ. So the other aspect of Christianity, that's also Vivekananda pointed out that. Just as he pointed out the problems of Hinduism, the casteism, the institutionalization, all that he pointed out, and he pointed out the problems of Buddhism. So also he says, every prophet, every great spiritual teacher may perhaps be misunderstood or misrepresented by man-made organizations and institutions. So he talks about the persecution, the inquisition, the violence, the massacres, and so on. So these are two important points to remember. One, the universal spiritual dimension of a great spiritual teacher like Christ. And again, the doctrinal, the hierarchical dimension of a great teacher. So both these aspects Swamiji says. Swami Vivekananda incidentally had read thoroughly a great book I encountered, The Precepts of Jesus. It was written by Rajaram Mohan Roy. You know, as I said, Rajaram Mohan Roy was the first great reformer of India, modern India, of course, modern times. Keshav Chandra Sen, Kali Charan Banerjee, all of them have written extensively on Christ and Christianity. So you find in Indian Christology, some of the pioneers of Indian Christology are Hindus who go into their temples every day, who worship the deities, who chanted the Vedas, and also read the Bible. So how do you understand this? And Vivekananda, in a way, was a product of this trend, which began with Rajaram Mohan Roy, who founded the Brahma Samaj in 1828. This continued. So what they were interested was the lofty mysticism, the universalism, and also the spiritual humanism that underlined the teachings of Jesus Christ. So according to Vivekananda, the universal, the spiritual, the eternal message that goes beyond time, the limitations of time, space, culture, customs, and socio-anthropological factors, that aspect can be found in the teachings and also the great scriptures of all great world religions. The universal. Those teachings stand for all, and those teachings are relevant for the whole humanity. Then there are certain teachings which are related to the socio-anthropological, the cultural, the national conventions and practices, customs and practices prevailing in the particular community into which a great prophet may be born. The language that he has to use, the parables, the analogies that he has to use to drive home a great spiritual message. I can give an example. One important parable in the New Testament, for example, the sower of the seed, is the very cornerstone of Hindu spiritual tradition. See, there in the parable, which I'm not going to narrate, everyone knows, the importance is given to the soil, that is human mind. So as we evolve in our own spiritual fitness, spiritual preparedness, through the practice of unselfishness, love and compassion and humanism, as we evolve in our own spiritual life, we are able to go deeper and deeper into the teachings of the great spiritual messages, spiritual ideas of scriptures. But if our mind is not ready, then those teachings will not have any effect. It's like the seeds falling on rocks, or the seeds falling on the thistles, or bony, or horny, or bushes full of thorns. So once we get ready to understand the spiritual significance of a great teaching, then those teachings really bear fruit. It's the same idea you find here. Again, you know, a shepherd, for example, if he loses one sheep, he will go in search of it. They can say in parable, Saint Luke. You find in the Vaishnava tradition, for example. These are these are examples of the universal dimension of great spiritual teachings and great spiritual prophets. For example, in the Vaishnava tradition, a lost sheep, so to speak, a fallen devotee, is given special privileges by the Lord. That idea behind it. So a person who is lost. God will, for some time, will show special compassion. So in the prodigal son returning, and the father gives him a special feast, of course not often complimented by his other children, other sons, still. So the father gives him special privilege. So in the Vaishnava tradition, the interpretation of prapatti, saranagati, self-surrender, says, so a devotee who loses his track, who deviates from the spiritual path, at the last moment, if he can remember the name of God, that remembrance is sufficient for him to get spiritual liberation. You find in Bhagavata Purana, it's called Ajamila Upakhyanam, in the story of Ajamila, a great saint who had a loose life, but who had, earlier he was a good man, he had a loose life. Finally, when he just accidentally chanted the name of God once, that was enough for him to liberation. So such ideas are very common among the great spiritual teachings of scriptures. Vivekananda doesn't directly quote them, but he often mentions this, that once we look beyond the socio-anthropological, the cultural, the immediate context, geographical or cultural context of the particular teaching, when we take it out of that context, you find there's a universal dimension. It has got a universal relevance for the whole humanity. So from that perspective, Swami Vivekananda says, from a Vedantic perspective, Jesus Christ gave a message which is relevant for the whole humanity, and in his own language, not only for the baptized. That aspect again is part of the hierarchy. You find in Hinduism also, you find. According to traditional Hinduism, for example, you have to undergo this ceremony, Upanayana is called, you know, the sacred thread ceremony, to be qualified to learn the Vedas. But that is only a very, very small, simple, geographical, cultural convention, which has no universal relevance. In modern times, Vivekananda says, anyone who has a thirst for higher knowledge and spiritual quest for truth can and should study the Vedas. So Vedas belong to the whole humanity. You can find Vivekananda's paper on Hinduism. So the teachings of Jesus, the teachings of Buddha, and the teachings of all great spiritual teachers belong to the whole humanity. See, Swami Vivekananda's very touching statement, had I lived in Palestine in the days of Jesus of Nazareth, I would have washed his feet not with my tears but with my heart's blood. That is Sister Nivedita quoting Swamiji in the Master as I saw him. So that's why he said, if he had lived during the time of Christ, he would have lived like a disciple of Jesus. That's where Vivekananda puts it. So that is the divine Christ, the universal spiritual symbol, which transcends limitations of time, culture, and customs. So Vivekananda says that this is the highest peak of the evolution of the Christ ideal or the Christian message. That's why I mentioned to you, you know, Vivekananda used to read this Imitation of Christ and this Philokalia, many of these books from time to time. Now, a great man like Vivekananda, who comes in modern times, who has so much of admiration for Jesus Christ and Christianity, naturally may have something not very pleasant to say about some of the other aspects of Christianity, just as he had a lot of unpleasant things to say about Hinduism, casteism, all that. So Swamiji says, for example, he was highly critical of the traditional Christian doctrine that anyone without faith in the Christian doctrine or who did not accept Jesus Christ as the only Savior will be subject to eternal punishment in heaven. That is something he could not put up with. That actually makes him a better Christian, really speaking. Because See, anyone who takes Jesus Christ out of these man-made prison walls and presents Jesus to the whole humanity as a great universal spiritual symbol whom everyone can understand, whom everyone can love, even non-Baptist people also can respect and worship, that person is doing a great service not only to Christianity but also to Jesus, really speaking. That is a great contribution of Vivekananda. Rajaram Mohan Roy or Keshav Chandra Sen, they could not play this role, this prominent role in the evolution of the unique approach of Indian Christology to Christ and Christianity, which has actually started influencing many prominent theologians even in Rome. So very often, you know, the well-known document with the Bible, it's called Dominus Iusus, they sometimes criticize Indian Christologists, Indian theologians, for not accepting, for not fully projecting the traditional Catholic view of Christ, the Christ the only way, all others are wrong. In India, you cannot do that. In India, what they do is something interesting. Drawing lessons from Gandhi, Vivekananda, and others, they say, but Christ represents a high spiritual symbol meant for the whole humanity. But the idea that if you do not go through this process of baptism, you are heading for hell, that is something which mainstream theologians in India are not openly willing to proclaim in a public platform today. Why? It's not possible then. So there are many Vatican theologians who find fault with Indian Christologists for not projecting this view. So that's actually, this is a contribution of Vivekananda. Rajaram Mohan Roy was not a very balanced theologian or a philosopher in this sense, but he was very lopsided. He was invited to London and he actually passed away at Bristol 3 years. From 1828 to 1831 he lived. No, maybe 1830 to 33 he passed away, the 3 years he spent. He was a guest speaker in many of the Unitarian churches and Anglican churches, Church of England. And there, he, instead of trying to give the universal dimension, he perhaps tried to play to the gallery. So his role was not very creative, not very successful. Then came Keshav Chandra Sen. He also more or less did the same. But when Vivekananda came, Vivekananda had two important spiritual assets. One, he had gone to the very depth of India's own Hindu Vedantic spiritual tradition. Not only theological, philosophical scholarship, but also spiritual experience, plus his own intuitive understanding of the New Testament. That's something very interesting. That's why when he came to America, when people asked him, Swami Vivekananda, this year, you know, 30 years back, 40 years back, this country was quite wild. It didn't mean the 1860s, 1850s. Many places in America were not willing to accept or receive or respect a great Indian thinker coming from an alien culture, presenting a different spiritual tradition. They were not willing, culturally, intellectually not fit. So they asked Vivekananda, what are you doing? Swamiji, I feel safe among the sons of Mother Mary. Now, how can a non-baptized Hindu philosopher coming from India can proudly say, I am protected by the sons of Mary? That sort of statement you could not have expected from Keshav Chandra Sen or Rajaram Mohan Roy. So Vivekananda, this unique spiritual dimension to his personality and also his understanding of both religious traditions. So he says, even Christians cannot understand their New Testament without understanding Vedanta. That may be a bit of a, you know, it's a bit complex idea, but I should try to explain. By Vedanta, the Vedanta doesn't mean a religion or Hinduism. Vedanta literally means Vedvidhatu. Sanskrit root means knowledge, realization, intuition, spiritual enlightenment. Antha means the peak, the final word, the essence. So those who have reached the highest end of spiritual enlightenment, that's Vedanta. And there are many great thinkers, many mystics in all traditions who have reached this level, not only through Hinduism, but through other traditions also. So the universal spiritual dimension of inner intuition in any religious tradition can be called Vedanta in the true sense of that term. That's why Vivekananda says, even Christians cannot understand their New Testament without understanding Vedanta. What it means is, when you try to understand the meaning of words in a religious scripture, you should transcend the words and the descriptions and definitions, and you should reach the level of intuitive experience. That experience is what Vivekananda is talking about when he used the Vedanta. So according to him, from a Vedantic perspective, if you look at the teachings of Jesus, well, it comes out of its immediate Judeo-Christian geographical cultural context. It becomes a spiritual message for the whole humanity and for all times. And this possibility to transcend the limitation, the immediate limitation of geography and culture, exists for all religious traditions. Every religion has this possibility, this potential to transcend its geographical cultural context. And it could be interpreted on a universal platform where anyone who reads it will feel it is my message. That's why Vivekananda says, from a Vedantic perspective, when he read the Bible, he said, it is a message meant for me too. That's why he said, if I had lived in Palestine, I would have washed the feet of Jesus, he says. Because from a Vedantic perspective, when he read the New Testament, he did not feel it is coming from an alien culture. Because Vedanta takes you beyond the cultural, geographical context. That's why he said, from a Vedantic perspective, Christ is a spiritual symbol meant for the whole humanity. Perhaps every religious tradition has a spark of the highest Advaitic Vedantic element. So maybe examples can be found, you know, if you compare the via negativa of Eckhart, you know, means where the God highest reality cannot be really explained, defined, or interpreted. It's beyond verbalization. In Sanskrit, it's called sarva pramana avati, means going beyond the hermeneutical, beyond the epistemological dimensions. You cannot explain or understand in words through descriptions or definitions. It is something that can only be experienced, can never be explained. So in that respect, the highest concept of God goes beyond even Holy Trinity, as Eckhart says. It's almost like Nanta Prakyam, Nabhuji Prakyam, Nubheda Prakyam, Naprakyam, Naprakyam. You find in the Mandukya Upanishad, 7th mantra is nothing but the genesis of Vaya Negativa, which Eckhart employed in 13th century, writing his books in Old German. So Vivek, we do not know, because Rudolf Otto's books had not been published during Vivekananda's time. We are not very sure that Vivekananda was actually familiar with that. So anyway, here we must remember that the early Christian theologians who openly declared their appreciation of non-Christian religious traditions, St. Augustine, the interpreter of the theory of Logos, said that those who had lived with Logos were Christians even though they did not openly declare their faith in God. Origen believed that God sent prophets and messengers to all nations. St. Augustine says, Christianity as a potential ideal existed from the very beginning of the world in different cultures and different forms. That which we which called Christianity or Christian religion today existed among the ancients and never did not exist from the beginning of the human race until Christ came in the flesh, at which time the true religion which already existed began to be called Christianity. So here's the true religion which already existed before Christ was born came to be called Christianity with the birth of Christ. That is St. Augustine. No, the point is, Vivekananda, quote, armed with his own understanding of the theology of Christianity and Vedanta, plus Hinduism, of course, and also, much more important, with his own intuitive experience of religion in its most original, in its pristine form, could quickly connect with the spiritual, the mystical dimension of Christianity when he read the Sermon on the Mount, which he praised so many times during his lectures and writings. So when you look at the Sermon on the Mount from a Vedantic perspective, then you read much more meaning into it. Because very often your understanding, your own spiritual experience helps you to go deeper into the meaning. At the same time, Vivekananda was not blind to the great contribution of Christianity to the very country, America, where he made all these great pronouncements. So he highly appreciated many of the virtues generated in American culture and character by his Protestant Christian heritage. So Swamiji refers to egalitarianism, self-reliance, social discipline, work ethic, self-effort, individualism, respect for human rights, and so on. So with all this, his deep understanding of the mystical element of Christianity and looking upon Jesus as a universal spiritual teacher who has a relevance and a message for the whole humanity, going beyond baptized Christians, even extending to the community of non-believers as every great spiritual teacher, as a message not only to those who believe in him, but also to those who do not believe in him. They are also his children. Now Vivekananda says that even in its most ordinary, empirical, sociological context, Christianity has played a very, very creative role in the formation of this great nation called America. For example, this egalitarianism, self-discipline, professionalism, work ethic. Maybe things are changing slightly these days, but it's only a passing phase, let us hope. But still, you find all these great virtues which characterize this unique political, socio-political experiment called the United States was partly a contribution of one aspect of Christianity, the Protestant Church, which made people to believe in their own ability to build their own destiny. Self-reliance, egalitarianism. So you find a great Swamiji who came to San Francisco, for example, Swami Dayanandaji. He observed the way hospitals were run in this country, hospitals meant for women, maternity hospitals. And he straight went back to India and he apparently started the first great maternity hospital in the city of Calcutta. It's a great Swamiji. See, and he drew inspiration from this unique cultural aspect where people believed in egalitarianism, believed in the virtue of helping others. So that is another aspect of Christianity, Protestant Christianity, maybe more precisely, because you can see a lot of difference between the stability or the lack of it. Or political institutions in both Catholic and non-Catholic countries, you find. Protestant countries seem to have better, more stable political institutions, more stable governments compared to Catholic countries. So Swamiji was all praise for this aspect of Christianity, which opened the doors for everyone, which broke all the chains, which gave people a sense of freedom, and sense of self-reliance, efficiency, organization, skill, all these great qualities which characterized many of the modern nations, which are built upon the bedrock of the Protestant values. Vivekananda incidentally quotes this, you know, that is from St. Paul, Acts. He says, the idea is expressed by St. Paul. Swamiji says, the God that ye ignorantly worship, him I declare unto you. This idea Vivekananda takes, you know, God whom by mistake you call man. God is present everywhere, everything, everywhere. So Swamiji reminded us that Christianity, like other nations, other religions, Hinduism, Islam, or any other traditions, had to endure the abuse of power and spiritual authority by the clergy. So Jesus, who is very near to you, God who is so near to you, is often interpreted as a distant dictator with holding a book in his hand. So with great men like Vivekananda, who are born coming from a totally different tradition, non-Christian tradition to be more precise, from Vedantic perspective, made a great contribution to modern theology. This is being recognized by many theologians, not everyone, of course, but still there are many, many great teachers, great Christian theologians, who have drawn their lessons from the works of Vivekananda. And also from the teachings of Gandhi. St. Andrews, for example. Andrews was Gandhi's disciple and a follower, who was a great Christian. But he thought that Christ, that Gandhi had something very wonderful to contribute to the modern theology. So this opening of the doors and windows, taking a great spiritual teacher like Jesus out of the immediate cultural, racial, linguistic, social context, presenting him as a great universal spiritual figure, meant for the whole humanity, relevant for the whole humanity, with a message for the whole humanity and for all times. That is a great contribution of Vivekananda. As I mentioned earlier, I'm concluding now, the earlier pioneers of Indian Christology, like Keshav Chandra Sen, Rajaram Mohan Roy, Kali Charan Banerjee, Brahmabandhu Upadhyaya, P.C. Majumdar, who came as a representative of Brahma Samaj to America in 1893, all of them had studied Christianity, but they did not have this balanced view. So you find Vivekananda's name is not found among the pioneers of Indian Christology, but the names of others are found. That's interesting. Brahmabandhu Upadhyaya, P.K. Kali Charan Banerjee, P.C. Majumdar, Rajaram Mohan Roy, Keshav Chandra Sen. But actually, it was Vivekananda who actually makes a distinct contribution to Christology as a whole. In modern times, you say Christology as not only Indian Christology, but it was as a whole. To understanding a great spiritual teacher beyond the cultural context in which he is born. Taking him out of the immediate social, cultural elements which characterized his upbringing. It doesn't mean that those aspects are irrelevant or insignificant. No doubt, it's true. See, if you want to know Buddha, for example, it may help you if you know something about Indian culture, customs, or Chinese, modern time Chinese or Far Eastern customs. It may help you. If you want to know about Hinduism, it may help you if you try to know something about India's culture and history. But it should not stop there. It may help you, but it has got a dimension that goes far beyond the immediate culture context in which a great teacher is born. The Vivekananda's great contribution was, he looks upon Jesus Christ, an eternal spiritual light, giant light as he calls him, that is burning, that spreads his light on everyone without any distinction. So this Vedantic perspective, which made him call Christ as a great incarnation of God, into that highest way of looking upon a great spiritual teacher from a Vedantic perspective. That, in essence, was Vivekananda's attempt to understand and interpret Christ and Christianity. Thank you.